Coming up on Chasing the Natty, we've made it through week 5 of the college football season. That means a whole new set of waiver wire players are here for you to enjoy, unless you're looking for running backs, in which case you might be out of luck this week. As always, we'll be tackling the disappointing players over the last couple of weeks and what to do with them moving forward. We'll also be talking about some big time week 4 performers that you should avoid on the waiver wire. And then, of course, we'll get to the part you're all dying to hear about, the players you should be adding to your roster, which could help you win your league down the line. We've got all of that and more coming right after this. This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Tuesday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus DeCanton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday and Wednesday morning during the season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campusdecanton.com, subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We got content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devy, C2C, College IDP, Underdog Pick'ems, College DFS. Really, if you play it, then we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I am at CFF underscore Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. Once again, I appreciate all of you guys tuning in. If you guys have not already, show us some love by leaving a like, comment, and subscribe on the YouTube side of things, and then on the podcast side of things. Make sure you leave a 5-star review and make sure you're following the show. Not only does that show us support, but it also shows the game of college fantasy in general a ton of support, and that gets us in front of the eyeballs that might be interested in what we want to talk about here and helps us grow the game. So I do my part here, bring you guys this content every single week, so y'all do your part and make sure you help us out with that. With that being said, y'all, what an incredible week 5. I did not get to catch a ton of the games. I am being real with you guys because if you guys follow me on Twitter, which if you don't, you should, at CFF underscore Jared, as I said in the intro there, I was in Tuscaloosa, Alabama this past weekend because my dogs were taking on our nemesis or foil. I don't really know really what else to call it, but we were taking on Alabama again this weekend, and obviously if you're watching college football in general this weekend, you I'd say have a 97% chance you had that game on your TV on Saturday night. I got the privilege of going there. I attended the game with my sister, who is a student at the University of Alabama, so got a really, really good seat, really, really good view of that game. And guys, let me tell you, I have been to some really good games at UGA. I was able to catch the Notre Dame game a couple of years ago when they came into Athens. I was there at the Arkansas game when they were top 10 coming into Athens. I've seen some really, really good environments at Georgia. And this is not to say that Georgia can never get like this, but just with the stakes of this game this weekend and, you know, the not hatred that's boiled between these two teams, but the clear level of respect that both programs have for each other and the stakes that are involved every time they go against each other, it was an incredible atmosphere to be a part of. And I will tell you this, that last Ryan Williams touchdown, I've seen stadiums go nuts before. I have never seen a stadium full of people just erupt into true, unadulterated pandemonium. Like, that was beyond just wild cheers during that touchdown. Like, I don't think there was a single person in that stadium that knew what to do with themselves during that. Like every Alabama fan, and Georgia fan could not believe what they just witnessed on that play. I've watched the TV rendition of the game as well, and I'm telling you guys right now, like you could not capture on TV what that stadium looked like. I'm pretty sure some decibel records were broken in Bryant-Denny Stadium during that play. It was an incredible experience. A lot of the people in Tuscaloosa were very nice. Obviously, sitting where I was, there were a lot of Alabama fans around me. And, of course, I was wearing a bright red Georgia jersey. And so, you know, I got my fair share of ribbing. I even got a fun little video that my sister recorded of me, of them jiving me. And I would play it here on the show, but we try to keep a PG around here. And let me tell you, that video would not fly under those guidelines. So that's enough of me talking about my weekend. Again, I had an absolute great time. I could, if y'all want to ask me more about the game, sure, DM me at @CFF_Jared on Twitter. But if you guys ever get a chance to go to a game like that, I know not everybody's a fan of a team that is going to be in stakes, games with stakes like that every year. But if your team ever does get into that environment, right, you gotta go, man. There's some just special moments. Like my team lost here, and like I came out of that game just kind of chipper because I knew I'd witnessed something just absolutely incredible. So I recommend to all of y'all, again, like obviously tickets are not the most affordable thing in the world, but just if you ever get the chance, man, like go make it a priority to attend a game like that for your team. Anyway, like I said, enough of the chit chatter. I've been talking long enough about that. Let's get into this past week's waiver wire recap. Obviously we had some fun. Ashton Giannini goes off once again, dude. He legit might win the Heisman. And not only will it be incredible when a running back wins it again, but also a G5 running back at that, like he's really leaving almost no doubt right now. Again, maybe the only people I'd say are potentially going to fight him for, again, Travis Hunter, I think, is quite legitimately, as long as he doesn't get hurt, a Heisman contender just because of how freakish of nature he is. And then I'll be real, after I watched him this past week, like Jalen Milroe looks fantastic, like both running and throwing the ball. And if he keeps up what he does from this past weekend going forward for Alabama, not only will he have a legitimate chance to win the Heisman, I think he puts Alabama in position for them to win a national title this year, like just straight up. Obviously, we've seen in the past that Milroe is not always the most consistent, but the Milroe I saw on Saturday, absolutely good. Again, enough of that. Lots of fun performances there. Let's get into this, right? You guys know the drill. If you've been listening long enough, we got three main segments here. We got the freakout list, which is players that are, you know, not doing too hot, players that you maybe we're relying on at one point, either early in the season, you drafted them early, or people that you picked up off the waiver wire we thought were going to be good, and now you're sitting here being like, oh, they kind of fell off. What's going on here? We'll talk about four of those guys here today. Then we'll get to my waiver wire traps of the week. These are usually five players that I see on the waiver wire that scored super highly in week five that I'm saying like, don't go there. And then last but not least, again, we'll get into the plays off of the waiver wire that you should be adding to your team. So, like I said, let's get on into it. Let's head on over to our freakout scale for this week. And let's put out the actual first slide here. We got four guys here today. The first two are going to be Kevin Concepcion and Ishmael Mahdi. One wide receiver out of NC State, the other one running back out of Texas State. We start with Kevin Concepcion. All three of myself, Nate Marquise, and Chris K, which are the three analysts that rate on the freakout scale every single week here, I'm at a 7. Nate Marquise, a huge fan of Kevin Concepcion, has him at an 8. Chris K also has him at an 8. So we are all firmly in the range of you need to be looking for a backup plan, aka targeting some wide receivers on the waiver wire to try to replace his production potentially. Chris and Nate are already at the point of like, there's no reason for him to enter your starting lineup. I'm a little bit better than that. Like I said, I'm at a 7. And here's why. It is crystal clear, right? Like since week one, where he scored 34.4 fantasy points, Kevin Concepcion in a half PPR format has not hit double digits since then, and that is a absolute tragedy. And you can blame a lot of things here, right? One, this offense just is not as good as we were anticipating it be. Grayson McCall was a huge disappointment, and now they're transferring over to a true freshman in CJ Bailey, a guy that I like, but again, still true freshman at the end of the day. And this offense just isn't what we think it was going to be. And unfortunately, you can't even really blame the schedule, right? Again, obviously some tough matchups here, Tennessee, Clemson, two out of the five games they've had so far, but that doesn't excuse a 10-point win over Louisiana Tech. That doesn't excuse a touchdown win over NIU, even though NIU did actually take Notre Dame. So maybe NIU is just really, really solid this year. But even still, right, if you've had Kevin Concepcion on your lineup the past 4 weeks, you've just been disappointed time after time after time. Again, I got him at a 7, mostly because, again, the numbers are still here. Like, the target numbers are still here. He's had 14, 7, 9, 11, and 8 targets. That is all very solid. But, man, the problem here is that the efficiency is dropping off big time. And the other part of it is that last year, this is kind of an underrated piece of Kevin Concepcion's game. He got a ton of carries last year as part of that offense. Again, good on Robert Anae for recognizing his talent there. But through so far, Kevin Concepcion has carried the ball only 4 times through 5 games, and 2 of which have gone for negative yards. And so in the other 2 have gone for 2 yards. So it's just not there anymore. He's not getting that extra bump in production here. Again, the good news for Kevin Concepcion is that even though this offense isn't nearly as good, he is still clearly the number one guy. The problem is that NC State's 107th in passing yards at 169.8 yards per game, which actually isn't that much worse than last year, which is what I was thinking, like, oh, maybe NC State was just better at passing last year. No, it is the fact that, one, they are, actually, that's not even true as well, because I was about to say they're spreading the ball around a little bit more, but that's not true. It's really just an efficiency problem. There's a huge sophomore slump issue kind of going on here for Kevin Concepcion. I'm not even saying it's fully his fault. I think the whole offense just isn't as good as it was last year. But if you compare this year to last year, right, in percentage of targets, like in terms of his target share, Concepcion actually has a higher percentage of targets this year at 34.5% compared to last year where he had 28.4%. His catch rate's gone down like a little bit from 68.4 to 64.6, but like a 4% difference isn't really going to kill your potential. Here's the real issue. He went from last year having 11.3 yards per catch to 7.8 yards per catch. His ADOT has dropped from 8.2 to 5.5, and his yards after catch has dropped from 7.9 yards per after catch per reception to 5.9 yards after catch per reception. So, like I said, just not getting the performances that we want out of him. But the good news is I don't think that means we can drop him yet. I think you can hold on to him, and maybe CJ Bailey kind of flips the switch down the stretch. I should have looked at the schedule here. Let me try to look that up real quick, because if NC State's schedule gets just a little bit easier down the stretch here, right, maybe we could see some. Yeah, they have a game this weekend, and they get a bye week in 3 weeks, right? So I think that there's a possibility that maybe after that bye week they get Stanford, Duke, Georgia Tech, North Carolina. Maybe we see a revitalization of this NC State offense, but for now, absolutely put them on the bench. Start them if you have to. Again, these bye weeks are brutal, but for Kevin Concepcion, I got him at a 7. Nate and Chris have him at an 8. Next guy up here, again, Ishmael Mahdi, running back out of Texas State. Just very similar to Kevin Concepcion. Solid week 1, 22.1 fantasy points, 28 carries, 156 yards, and a touchdown. You're thinking, all right, picking right up, back up where we left off with Mahdi. Well, then very next week, 9 carries, 26 yards, 4 catches, 56 yards, ends the day with 10.2 fantasy points. All right, that sucks, but you know, it was a blowout over UTSA. You can kind of hand wave that away. Then 14 carries, 68 yards, 5 catches, 28 yards against Arizona State, and you're like, okay, you know, hand wave away again, you know, Power 4 opponent, even though it was a pretty close game that they could have won. But, you know, they got to keep up with the Power 4 opponent. And then last week, Sam Houston, 17 carries, 57 yards, one catch, 5 yards. No touchdowns. Very similar to Kevin Concepcion. I'm going to compare what Ishmael Bonney did in his first four games this year compared to his first four games last year as Ishmael Bonney as we know him, right? Like, I didn't compare his first couple of games because they didn't really give him the rock that much to start the season. But once he got going, here's the comparison. And this is alarming. Bonney through four games last year had 91 attempts. This year, he has 67 attempts. Last year, through the first four games as a starter, he had 543 yards. This year, he has 301. Last year, he was toting the rock at just 6 yards per carry flat. This year, he's down to 4.5 yards per carry flat. Last year, Bonney had 6 touchdowns to this point. This year, he's got 1. His receiving's roughly about the same again. He was more efficient last year, 5 catches, 146 yards. This year, he's got 11 catches, 89 yards. No touchdowns to this point for either of which. So the volume's still kind of there. Again, he's had 35 carries in the last two games, or 35 touches, excuse me, in the last two games. But man, again, looking at those efficiency numbers, like, it's not there. And an even bigger problem for Bonney, in my opinion, is there's a lack of goal line touchdowns going on with Bonney. If you break, like, let's break down every 10 or less yard touchdown from the Bobcats so far this year. So against Sam Houston, there's a 6-yard passing touchdown to Joey Hobert, another 2-yard pass to Joey Hobert, a 3-yard run from Lincoln Pear, a 4-yard pass from Cole Wilson. Against Arizona State, there's a 5-yard pass to Chris Dawn, a 6-yard pass to Jaden Williams. Against UTSA, 2-yard touchdown run by Jordan McLeod, 2-yard touchdown run by Deion Hankins. And then versus Lamar, first game of the season, Bonney finally gets a touchdown in game one. So of the 9 touchdowns of 10 or less yards, Bonney has had 1. Last year, he was feasting off of these. And, you know, it's a big problem with it this year, right? Again, Bonney's still getting some volume, but it's very clear that Texas State wanted to kind of spare him the load. He's still the number one guy by a decent margin, but they're reliant on guys like Lincoln Pear, guys like Deion Hankins, relying on guys like Terrence Burgess, the other running back out of UTEP, right? It's not full committee here because Bonney, like I said, Bonney's still the main guy, but man, it's making getting touchdowns for him super hard. Now, hopefully that means here in the near future that he is somebody that can, you know, have a bounce back game, end the game with 3 touchdowns. I could totally see that. That's why I still got him at a 6, right? I still think he's startable. I think there's still some good matchups here soon. Nate's got him at a 4. Chris Case also got him at a 6. So if you got Bonney, definitely look for a backup plan, even though I don't think there's very many good running back options right now on the waiver. But otherwise, like, check your other guys, make sure you don't have anybody else better to start, but I still think he's technically roll-outable, if that's a word, in CFF leagues. All right, next 2 freakout skill guys, I'll probably go through these guys just a little bit quicker here. Byron Brown, obviously there's a bit of big asterisk on Byron Brown. I probably should have put that on the graphic as well, but the big asterisk here is that Byron Brown this past week against Tulane left the game. He was taken to the locker room, did not return, and there's been no official announcement on what's going on with him, what kind of injury we're dealing with there, how long he's going to be out. There's, you know, message board rumors flying around that Brown's played his last snap for the Bulls, which wouldn't be the most surprising thing in the world given the NIL era that we live in. But even before him getting injured here, right, there was reason to be concerned. Byron Brown was on fire to start last year, ended up finishing as a top 10 quarterback in CFF, and just so far this year, it just hasn't been there for Brown. Again, week one, 19.48. Week two, 14.92. Week three against Southern Miss, we get 28.92. All right, Byron Brown's back. Here we go. Never mind. He gets 20.56 points versus Miami. But, you know, Miami, that makes sense. Bama, 14 points. Makes sense. He's got Tulane this week. That should be a shootout. 10 points. Granted, he played half a game. But regardless, like, he was not on pace to do much in that game. And so, when I asked Nate and Chris K, I asked them, like, rate him assuming that he's healthy, he's back next week, whatever, right? Obviously, if he's hurt, that changes everything. But we're mostly trying to figure out, like, on a freak out scale, how are we handling the lack of production from Brown so far? And Nate has him at a 4. I have him as a 6. Chris K's got him at a 9. So we're wildly different on this. I know Kay is very, very concerned about the lack of passing stats here. And that is clearly an issue, right? Again, once again, comparing the first five games of this year compared to last year. Last year, Brown had almost 400 more passing yards to this point in the season. And he had 7 more passing touchdowns to this point in the season. And what also doesn't help is that the thing we love Brown for, his rushing, also has taken a big hit. Last year to this point, 5 games into the season, he had 68 carries, 450 yards, and 5 touchdowns. This year, 53 carries, 351 yards, and 3 touchdowns. So everything's taken a big hit with Brown. And a lot of that has to do with Alex Golish. One, again, there's a bit of, you know, some matchup issues here, right, with Bama Miami as 2 of your first 5 games. But again, to not even do much against, you know, the likes of Tulane, against Bethune-Cookman, right? There's definitely some issues there. But I have him at as a 6. Nate's not very worried about him at a 4. Again, Kay's obviously very worried about him at 9. The reason why I have him as a 6, one, I absolutely think you should look for a backup plan, regardless because of the injury, but even still, like, even if he wasn't injured, I'd be looking for a backup plan at this point. But here's the thing. This is the rest of South Florida's schedule. Memphis, UAB, Florida Atlantic, Navy, Charlotte, Tulsa, Rice. Like, I'm willing to hold on to Brown through at least a few of those games to just see if we can get a bounce back there. But obviously, that's contingent on his injury. We will find out more about that, I'm pretty sure, here soon. Last guy we'll talk about in the freakout list today is a guy that requested by popular opinion to get an update on, and that is Evan Stewart, wide receiver out of Oregon. Nate's got him as an 8. Kay and I got him as a 9. What did we hope for with Evan Stewart when people were drafting him in the first or second round of leagues, right? The hope was that he was going to be a one-for-one replacement for Troy Franklin, or at least get, you know, like 90% of what Troy Franklin did. Here's the deal. Troy Franklin, 2023, he had, at this point, 42 targets, 32 receptions. Evan Stewart, to this same point in the season, 20 targets, 14 receptions. And Evan Stewart's just been less efficient. Again, he's got 11.6 yards per catch compared to Franklin's 17.5 yards per catch. Complete lack of touchdowns. Franklin had 7 to this point last year. Evan Stewart has 1. Franklin could also do more with his catches. He had 6.8 yards after catch per reception versus Evan Stewart, 3.4 yards after catch per reception. Again, I like Evan Stewart as a talent. I think he'll be good in the NFL. Here's the problem. He's just not Troy Franklin in this offense. And that's what's killing his value right now. They're not utilizing him the same way as Franklin. And because of that, his value is suffering here. Again, look at these past couple of weeks. 3 points versus Idaho. 19.7 points versus Boise, which arguably is their hardest game, so I don't know why they're not going to him more, but he had 4 targets versus Oregon State for 26 yards, and then 4 targets for 9 yards versus UCLA. Like, good freaking Lord. This is, it just didn't work out for us, y'all. So I'm putting him at as a 9. I almost would put him at a 10 in redraft leagues. Like, there's no reason really to keep holding on for hope right now. There hasn't really been much glimmer of a hope. So that's our waiver traps of the week. Let's move on over to, or excuse me, I got that totally wrong. That's our freakout list, freakout scale for the week. Let's move on over to our waiver wire traps as soon as I take a swig of tea here. That's good stuff. And let's move on here and let's talk about some of these players. I'm going to move through these relatively quickly here. First guy up here is Tommy Ulutowski, quarterback out of Kent State. First time starting this year. Again, it was kind of expected that he would be the starting quarterback for Kent State, considering that he finished the year last year. But then we all kind of got a little surprised when Devin Kargman won the job, which good on Mr. Kargman, but now he's injured and out for the rest of the year. And Ulutowski gets to come in here. And he did great against Eastern Michigan for a first game here. 28 passes, 15 completions, 345 yards, and 3 touchdowns. And another touchdown on the ground despite him having negative rushing yardage. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying this one performance as an indicator of future MAC play here. Obviously, Kent State's now through the brutal portion of its schedule. It should be easy sailing in terms of the actual schedule they'll be facing against the MAC. Problem is, again, I'm looking at this, right? 12.3 yards per attempt for a MAC quarterback just isn't what we see typically. 345 yards on 28 attempts just is not what I'm expecting going forward. Getting a rushing touchdown on negative rushing yardage, you know, not unheard of, but it's a pretty good indicator that we're not going to see a ton of rushing touchdowns going forward. We haven't really seen a ton of Maxion blowouts, or not blowouts, like high scoring games like this. Like this game ended 52-33. It's been a while since we've seen consistent MAC play like that, so I wouldn't expect, you know, Kent State to have that many scoring opportunities moving forward. So I'm not buying Ulutowski. Next player here is Nakiri Rogers, running back out of New Mexico. This is pretty much, again, the whole deal with New Mexico right now is that their running back situation is almost entirely based off hot hand, right? We've seen guys like Eli Sanders. Nakiri Rogers has flashed at times. Actually, I can't even really say that. But there's no consistency in this backfield for New Mexico. There's no better point, or there's no way to show that point than to tell you the carry numbers of Rogers over the last 5 weeks. 6 carries versus Montana State, 2 carries versus Arizona, 5 carries versus Auburn, 3 carries versus Fresno, and then 21 carries versus New Mexico State this past week. One of those games is not like the other, and I'm not going to count on Rogers continuing to get 20 plus carries here in the next couple of weeks and getting 3 touchdowns on top of that, especially when you got Devin Dampier there taking away touchdowns as well. Maybe there's a pattern here of Rogers just getting game scripted out very early on, and they don't really use him in the passing game, so, you know, they don't throw him out there for that. And then the one game where New Mexico led and won, you see him get a ton of carries. But again, looking forward on New Mexico's schedule, I should have pulled up Nick Allen's numbers from CFB Winning Edge just to see if they're even favored in any game moving forward. But like Air Force, maybe, but like Air Force, I think, could shut him down. Utah State, Colorado State, Wyoming, San Diego State, Washington State, Hawaii. Like, which games are you expecting New Mexico to lead consistently in those games? Because I don't really think there's anybody I can really count on. Next guy on my post week 5 waiver traps is Tate Carney, the running back out of Wake Forest. Had himself a pretty solid day after, I say a solid day, but it wasn't even that solid. But like, he finished a good fantasy day, 26.1 fantasy points here, 17 attempts, 59 yards, and 3 touchdowns with 2 catches for 12 yards through the air. He had himself a really nice day because Demond Claiborne went down for a portion during this game. There's no official word on Demond Claiborne's health right now. He was straight up carted off the field during this game, which made you think that, all right, no way he's coming back. Well, then he does come back for like 3 carries and breaks off a 60-yard touchdown run, and then he doesn't see a carry the rest of the game. So, like, riddle me that. Like, I couldn't tell you what's going on with Demond Claiborne. I'm really hoping we can get some official information on him at some point this week. Regardless, back to Carney. He steps up in Claiborne's absence, obviously is the clear number two guy here at Wake Forest. Again, getting 17 carries is no joke. Problem is, again, you only have 59 yards on those carries, averaging 3.5 yards per rush. He's averaging that against Louisiana's rushing defense, which is currently 106th in the country. He had a long carry of 8. I just don't think that's an indication that Carney's a particularly good running back. Like, he's not going to come in and step in and replace Demond Claiborne. Now, again, a little bit of bias there showing, because I love Claiborne. I've been on him for a while now, and I'm glad that he's finally getting his due in this Wake Forest offense this year. But I just don't think Carney can replace his level of talent. And it was, to me, it was pretty clear in this past week against Louisiana Lafayette. So, one, Claiborne could come back at any moment here. We don't know his official status here, so don't go after Carney there. But also, two, I just don't think he's particularly great. I think he has some really dud weeks, even if he is the starter. Next guy here is Omega Blake, more like Omega Fake, a wide receiver out of Charlotte here. This is quintessential waiver wire trap stuff right here. This past week, 29.8 fantasy points in half PPR formats, 5 targets, 5 receptions, 153 yards, and 2 touchdowns. You guys are already seeing the problems as I read out those stats. 5 targets, that is second highest target number on the year. He has 2 games of 1 target to start the year. He has 7 versus Gardner-Webb, 3 versus Indiana, and then 5 this past week. The other part of it, 30 yards per catch. The only wide receiver currently that I trust to get 30 yards a catch consistently is Mr. Ryan Williams over at Alabama. Otherwise, I'm not buying that whatsoever. And then also, again, 2 touchdowns when he has only 1 through 4 games to that point in the season. Everything here points to Blake being an absolute fraud in terms of CFF production, so I will be avoiding him at all costs. And last but not least, Legendre, the wide receiver out of Louisiana. Very similar story here, right? 2 targets in week 1, 1 target in week 2, 4 targets in week 4, and then 7 targets this past week. Maybe this is a sign of him getting more volume moving forward, but even still, 7 targets does not excite me a ton. He reeled in 6 of those, 123 yards, 2 touchdowns, but he only had, that's the only time he's hit, this year he's hit above 60 yards in a game, and it's the only time he's found the end zone in the game. So I'm not trusting Lance Legendre moving forward. And then with that being said, that is enough of our waiver wire traps. Told you guys I would get through those relatively quickly because I think most of them are relatively obvious at this point. That being said, guys, it's time to go hit up some of these waiver wire picks. Before I get to that, let me take a sip of tea. All right, I'm out of tea, so that means no more sips for me. And let's talk about some of these waiver wire pickups for this week. In terms of overall feel of waiver wires for this week, quarterbacks, I think, once again, is kind of the place to start to kind of keep looking. One, I know it is bye week hell. Like, week 6 is atrocious on some of these bye weeks, and I will try to do a decent job with starts this week to really try to help you guys find some guys you can really get off of the waiver wire potentially. I'll try to name some of them here. But definitely during the start sits tomorrow, I'll try to find some guys that you guys can help or you guys need in order to plug some of those holes on your roster for this week. But quarterback, I think, is the one area where you can get kind of the best of both worlds, right? You're going to get some guys that are, you know, long-term value and also have some pretty decent matchups this week. Running back, good Lord, we'll get to that in a second. But, like, I'll be real, y'all, like, I'm not going to spend much time on running backs this week because I think there's not a single guy that's consistently on the waiver wire right now that I feel like I can trust. So we'll get to that when we cross that bridge when we get there. And then wide receiver, it's like with quarterbacks, it's like you can get the best of both worlds of like good matchup this week and good long-term value. Wide receivers to me this week, it's like you get one or the other. You get a solid rest of your play, but they're already on bye this week, or you get guy that's got pretty good value for this week, but I wouldn't trust him that much down the line. So that's my overall thought process to give you a little teaser of what kind of stuff we'll be dealing with. Let's hit up quarterbacks. And number one quarterback we will be talking about here today is Mr. Haj Malik Williams, the quarterback out of UNLV, the replacement for Matthew Sluka in this Rebels offense. He went 13 for 16 this past week for 182 yards and 3 touchdowns through the air. He had 12 rushing attempts for 119 yards and a touchdown there. Rostered on 7% of leagues. The Sluka stuff really just still doesn't make any sense to me. I kind of mentioned it last week where, again, there was a lot of support coming from the locker room of UNLV for Haj Malik Williams to get the start. And it made it sound like that, you know, they've been waiting for him to get the start for a while. And it makes me wonder why this coaching staff went with Sluka in the first place. Like, yeah, you can say like, oh, well, they made promises to him. I'm like, well, there's nothing really there to incentivize them to hold that promise because they didn't offer him NIL, clearly, based on this past week, right? But like Haj Malik Williams, one, looked solid in the spring. He came a whole semester early. The offensive players seem to love him a ton. Just the whole locker room seems to love him a ton. I don't get why he didn't start from the first place. And this past week, absolutely torched Fresno State. Like I mentioned, again, 182 yards passing. That is the highest we have seen out of a UNLV quarterback so far this year in a single game. Very, very accurate there. Obviously, 13 for 16. And some people might be saying, like, oh, I don't like that 16, you know, pass attempts number. Like, that's going to spell doom. It's Sluka all over again. I'm like, and I'll say, no, I wouldn't think so, because this is a situation where they were blowing out Fresno State early, and UNLV is not afraid to run the ball in that scenario. So we did have a pretty solid conversation in our C2C Slack channel earlier, in our CFF channel in there, of our people kind of jumping the gun on Haj Malik Williams here. Because again, he had a really solid week. Again, 37.8 fantasy points here. You know, that points to him potentially being not necessarily a league winner, but like a guy that could be huge for lineups down the line if you can get him now. And to the question of, are we jumping the gun a little bit? Potentially, I think a little bit, right? Again, this is a one game sample size, even though I think it matches a lot of what we saw in the spring game for him as well. My, not rebuttal to it, but my response to that would be, we're going to find out very quickly just how good HMK is. He has 3 of his 4 toughest remaining games up next, right? Or excuse me, 3 of his next 4 games are the 3 toughest games that he has left. This weekend, he's got Syracuse. Whether you like it or not, like, that is a Power 4 team coming into your home, right? At Utah State, they'll be fine there. Then they go on the road to Oregon State. After that, Boise State comes to town, which might be a preview of the Mountain West Championship, right? We'll find if Haj Malik Williams is legit, we're going to find out in this next 4-game stretch for the Rebels. So, and the good news is there's not even a bye week in the middle of there. So we'll get all these UNLV games back to back here. Next up, let's talk about Mr. Bryson Daly, the quarterback out of Army. And I'm punching, hitting, pinching, whatever myself right now, guys, because this doesn't feel real. I'm recommending a triple option quarterback for the second year in a row, or second week in a row. But once again, I'm looking at what Daly's done the last couple weeks, and I can't ignore what I'm seeing. Now, Daly does not have the passing acumen that Blake Horvath has been showing, right? Again, he has 9 attempts as his max number of passes, his max, his max passing numbers is 107 yards in a game so far this year. It's the rushing that is incredible here and provides an extremely nice floor. Since the start of the season, Daly has not had a game below 78 points. And to help out with that, or 78 yards, excuse me. And to help out with that, in three of his four games so far, he has scored at least two touchdowns on the ground. And so you got a guy with a really nice floor who it seems like he's getting a really nice solid production every single week, has great shots at getting touchdowns every single week. He's been blowing, Army has been blowing out like all of their competition so far. Every single game has been decided by at least 17 points here for Army so far. Does that continue down the stretch? Potentially, but also I really, or potentially not, but like I like their schedule moving forward. Again, at Tulsa, UAB, East Carolina, none of those games scare me for Daly moving forward. So I think Daly's actually a pretty solid option at quarterback. Next quarterback up is Ben Wooldridge, the quarterback out of Louisiana, rostered on 8% of rosters. I am not a big fan of Louisiana quarterbacks, but once again, Wooldridge feels like a very steady option for you going forward. His past 2 weeks have been especially nice. Again, against Tulsa, 33.22 fantasy points. Against Wake Forest last week, 31.68 fantasy points. He isn't like a kingmaker at, you know, with his rushing ability, but, you know, he's gotten 30, 37, and 34, you know, rushing yards, and he's gotten three touchdowns in the last two games on the ground. So I'm hoping that is a trend that continues there. The one thing I'm kind of worried about is that in both, like his best two performances have come against, you know, Tulane and Wake Forest, both games that were effectively shootouts. So if we get into a scenario here where Louisiana, kind of like they did, well, one, if they're blowing out a team like they did against Kennesaw State or Grambling, there's a decent shot that Wooldridge is pulled early. But also, two, right, if this is a lower scoring game, I feel like Wooldridge's value could take a decent hit there. So I like Wooldridge. Again, I liked what he's done the last couple of weeks. I like the schedule moving forward here at Southern Miss, who's just been demolished by everybody so far. Versus App State. App State's defense has some question marks on it. And then Coastal Carolina. I mean, all three of those are games that if I had to, I could grab Wooldridge and I'd be comfortable starting him in all three of those games. So next quarterback up is Mr. Sawyer Robertson, quarterback out of Baylor at 2%. Daquan Finn is hurt. Shocker. Sawyer Robertson comes in and he is looking solid these past 2 weeks against Colorado, 28.12 fantasy points. And then he followed that up with another come from behind. Another come from behind performance against BYU here, where he was able to put up 33.86 fantasy points, throwing the ball 48 times. Now, obviously, that is heavily influenced by his game script, considering he threw 24 times against Air Force and 21 times versus Colorado. But the thing I'm really liking about Sawyer Robertson is that this staff is not afraid to use his legs. He's got 82 yards versus Colorado. He got 29 yards versus BYU this past week, and he's got a touchdown on the ground in each of his last three games. Fairly clearly, the staff wants to utilize him in that way. And the main thing I'm kind of worried about here is what happens when Daquan Finn comes back. And I'll be real, Robertson's kind of playing well enough that I think there's a decent shot that Robertson doesn't let go of this job when Finn comes back. Maybe that changes moving forward. Maybe, you know, Robertson craps the bed against Iowa State this upcoming weekend, which is a pretty tough matchup, I will fully admit. But I like Robertson. I think that he is Baylor's best hope at kind of getting their season back on track right now. And I think he'll have some very solid weeks for CFM moving forward. Last quarterback that I want to touch on here is Mr. Kevin Jennings, quarterback out of SMU, rostered on 4% of rosters. Unlike some of the other guys here, we haven't seen that monster fantasy performance out of Jennings yet. His best performance came from this past week against Florida State of all teams. 16 completions on 23 attempts, 254 yards, and three touchdowns to the air. And he actually had his worst day rushing. He had 9 carries for 12 yards. He's had as high as 54 yards and a touchdown versus Houston Baptist a couple of weeks ago. So why am I recommending you him if he's got his highest total has been 23.386 fantasy points? But we know that Rhett Lashley's offense can produce a CFF valid quarterback, right? Now take that quarterback and add some dual threat ability to him. And then take that same quarterback and give him some good receivers to work with. And I think you're slowly but surely getting the birth of Kevin Jennings here. And so I like SMU's schedule moving forward. They have the easiest schedule in the Power Four. They do get Louisville this weekend, which isn't the best opponent, but after that they get Stanford and a whole bunch of other ACC teams that are not particularly hard to, they're not particularly hard to put up some points on. And so I think Kevin Jennings has a really solid opportunity to become a very good CFF option moving forward. So that's our quarterbacks. Let's move on to our running backs. And like I said, y'all, I don't trust much of what's going on here. I think that one, if you're watching this on YouTube, you can clearly tell my thoughts on all these guys by the fact that I have not put up individual graphics for any of these guys. I'm just listing them all out as honorable mentions because that's about the confidence level I have in all of these guys for one reason or another. They might as well just be a list of honorable mentions. And so we'll start with the first one here with Jaden Nixon, running back at a Western Michigan, 5% rostered here. Y'all, I appreciate y'all. I'm glad that you think I am good at my job and that I can find information that literally nobody else can. But I do not know what is going on with Jalen Buckley. I have gotten DMs, I've gotten tags on Twitter, and I say it most of the time of, I wish I knew just like you did. You guys think that pulling teeth is hard, like pulling information out of a MAC team, especially one as, no offense to Western Michigan fans, but one that is not nearly followed at all by, you know, by people outside of the MAC. You're not going to get any good information out of there. But regardless, Buckley's been gone the last couple of weeks, and in his place, Oklahoma State running back transfer Jaden Nixon has performed very, very well against Bethune-Cookman, 17 carries, 189 yards, and 2 touchdowns. This past week, got the full workload at 23 carries, 146 yards, and a touchdown there. If you're struggling at running back, this is a dice you got to roll here, right? Nixon's got himself a nice favorable schedule here in the next couple of weeks. Ball State, which just got taken to the woodshed by James Madison. They get Akron after that. They go on the road to Buffalo. Like, Western Michigan could not ask for a better MAC lineup right there over the next 3 games. And I'd be willing to grab Nixon and to stash him on my roster and play him for this week, especially in a week where there's not a ton of buys, right? And I would be willing to just roll that dice one last time to see if Buckley's out. Does Nixon do what he's done the last 2 weeks? So next one up is Delbert Mims, the third, the running back out of Eastern Michigan. This is a very clear trend here of when the game's competitive, Mims gets more carries. When the game is not, he is fully out. As you can see with his stat lines, right, against Washington, 12 carries, 30 yards, nothing to really show for it. And then against St. Francis, which was a game in which, you know, Eastern Michigan won 36-0. We see Mims once again, 6 carries, 23 yards, a touchdown in that one at the very least. But when it's a blowout one way or another, Nixon or Mims does not get involved very well. But in these more competitive games like this past week against Kent State, we saw a very, very productive Delbert Mims here, right? 23 carries, 145 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I'm not saying this is something that continues week to week, but it's a very good sign of a team in the MAC finding potentially one of their star players. And their next 2 games, they don't have him. They don't have Mims. Mims doesn't have a game this week, but his next 2 games are Miami of Ohio and Central Michigan, 2 teams that clearly struggle with defending the rush. So Mims could be a very good value over weeks 7 and 8 as more players get on buys. Next running back here is Javon Ducker, running back out of Sam Houston. This is just simply a volume play, right? I've talked about before that Sam Houston is mostly going with a running back committee this year, but right now I'm kind of getting proven wrong by Mr. Ducker in terms of, you know, 15 carries, 148 yards against Hawaii, 20 carries, 38 yards, and a touchdown versus New Mexico State. And then against Texas State, 14 carries, 69 yards, and 3 touchdowns this past weekend, which is partially what kind of put him on the map. Obviously, I don't expect 3 touchdowns every single week, but there is a consistent volume that is kind of being built here. It's obviously not the elite volume that you'd like to see, but again, if you're struggling at running back, I think there's worse things to take a shot on than a guy like Javon Ducker, who has been averaging, let's see, 50 divided by 3, so you're looking at, what, 16 to 17 touches a game here over the last 3 games? So I'm thinking that, Ducker is a pretty solid option off the waiver wire. We'll see. Maybe it could turn out to a hot hand situation with Sam Houston, but for right now, there's not many other options on the waiver wire, I'm telling you right now. Last two, I'm going to kind of combine into one because they're kind of in the same category for me. There's Jeremy Payne, the running back out of TCU, and Caden Durham, the running back out of LSU. We've kind of talked Durham before already, but you know, he went and had himself another fantastic weekend this past weekend. 7 carries, 128 yards, and a touchdown on the ground. He also had 3 catches for 89 yards and a touchdown. Dude was just absolutely on fire. And so now we also have Jeremy Payne here, and some of you might be asking, who the heck is Jeremy Payne? Well, Jeremy Payne is a true freshman running back out of TCU. And if you've been following along TCU this year, they've been giving Cam Cook the ball. Problem is, Cam Cook can't do anything with the ball. I just realized there's a low-hanging Cam can't cook joke here that I'm sure my girlfriend will hear and ask me to edit out later. Regardless of all that, Cook isn't doing well for TCU. Like, just flat out. Like, you're getting above, barely averaging above 3 yards a carry. That's just not what you want to see in a Power 4 running back. So they bring in Payne this past weekend against Kansas. And immediately, there's some life to the rushing attack here. 8 carries, 65 yards, and a catch for 10 yards. Instantly goes from a team that couldn't hardly run the ball with Cook, averaging less than 3 yards per carry, to Payne in this game, ripping off some big ones and getting 65 yards on the day for 8.1 yards per rush. So I am saying that guys like Payne and Durham, they're not getting the volume we want to see yet. We haven't even seen them get that level yet. But I think both of them are worth stashing onto rosters if you have some room just to see how things kind of evolve down the stretch here. So with that being said, those are my running back waiver options for this week. I do have one honorable mention is the player that we talked about last week, and that is Star Thomas, running back out of Duke. All he did was go and get 30 carries this week in a come-from-behind victory against UNC. Star Thomas, I think, is a very clear option if he's still available on the waiver wire. The only thing I'd be worried about is, you know, his brother potentially coming back. Or not brother. Jacquez Moore. Jacquez Moore has been injured for the Blue Devils. And so if he comes back, I do wonder how much that'll impact Star Thomas. But regardless, like I said, there's far worse things for you to spend your FOB or your waiver picks on this upcoming weekend. So last but not least, let's hit on the wide receivers. We will start, actually, before I start, I should really apologize on some level, because I know a lot of you, because of the bye week hell that we're dealing with right now in week 6, where so many teams are on bye here, that a lot of you specifically requested me, like, hey, Jared, I really need some waiver options for guys this week. For my official plays at wide receiver, I did not accomplish that. I think 4 out of the 5 guys I'll talk about here as rest of season options are all on bye this week. But But I recognize my flaw. And while I'm still going to go with my top five guys here in terms of rest of season value, I did put together some work for that. And so in the honorable mentions, I almost lost my train of thought there. I so apologize to everyone there. So with that being said, let's hit on these wide receivers here. We'll talk with Ted Hurst here, wide receiver out of Georgia State, rostered on 22% of rosters. This is like the dream of what you want to see an out-of-nowhere wide receiver come from, right? Three targets in week one versus Georgia Tech. Week two, seven targets versus Chattanooga. Week three, 11 targets versus Vanderbilt. And then week five this past week, 13 targets versus Georgia Southern. The opportunities continue to go up for Hurst every single week here. And he's getting real good production and a very safe floor each week. 83 yards and a touchdown versus Chattanooga, 128 yards and two touchdowns versus Vanderbilt, and then four catches for 112 yards and a touchdown versus Georgia Southern this past weekend. The volume's there, the efficiency's there. I love what I'm seeing from him so far. Georgia State needed a number one wide receiver to go to, and I think it's pretty clearly coming out to be Ted Hurst here. He's got some really nice opponents in the next 3 weeks. He's got a bye this week, but afterwards he faces Old Dominion. Then he faces Marshall. And so, again, there's not really much else to say. Again, this is the kind of guy that you're looking for off of waiver wires. He plays in the Sun Belt, so there's plenty of shootout opportunities for him and his Panthers for him to get some, in some touchdowns. So I like Ted Hurst quite a bit. In a similar vein, except in CUSA here, Eric Rivers, the wide receiver out of FIU, rostered on 2% of leagues, is another guy that I have my eye on here as a hyper-efficient, hyper-efficient and very much a guy that has been very consistent the last couple of weeks. Specifically last 3 weeks, again, against Florida Atlantic, six targets, four catches for 101 yards and a touchdown. He against Monmouth, five catches, 101 yards, no touchdowns there. But then against Louisiana Tech this past week, 13 targets, seven catches, and a touchdown there. I think that FIU is a bad team for the most part. They're not going to have a ton of scoring opportunities a lot of weeks. But at the end of the day, sometimes targeting the best player, the best weapon on a bad offense is not a bad way to go, especially in a PPR league where you may not want the touchdown, or you obviously always want the touchdowns, but you may not be able to get the touchdowns, but those sweet PPR points can definitely help when a team like FIU is constantly going to be playing from behind. So I like Eric Rivers quite a bit. Again, once again, on bye this week, but afterwards he gets Liberty. After that, he gets UTEP. Very, very nice for him. Next wide receiver up, number three on my list today, is Mr. Chris Hudson, wide receiver out of Washington State, rostered on 16% of rosters. Once again on a bye, but then his opponents after that are Fresno State and Hawaii. A very favorable schedule for Washington State moving forward after their showdown with Boise State this weekend, which obviously did not go the Cougars' way like they thought. But without y'all looking, if I were to poll all of you, who leads Wazoo in targets? I have a feeling that less than a third of you would be saying Chris Hudson, because Chris Hudson's been quietly extremely productive here, right? He had 101 yards in week one, 25 in week two, obviously not great, 50 in week three. Week four, we get 77 yards there. And then this past week, he has his biggest game of the year so far, 126 yards in that game. And very similar to Ted Hurst, the target numbers are just going up and up for Chris Hudson. Obviously, they'll come down at some point, but six, starting off at six and continuously increasing from 7 to 10 to 13 and 13 again here in this second week in a row, he's gotten himself 36 targets over the last 3 weeks. That's averaging 12 targets a game. That is a beautiful, beautiful amount of targets. Obviously, we don't expect that every single week, but I've talked about touchdown regression before here, right? And Chris Hudson is almost at 400 yards, and he currently only has the one touchdown. He plays on the outside. Kyle Williams has been getting a ton of love on the outside there. He's got five touchdowns on 25 catches there. Hudson's got the same number of catches, but only one touchdown. I think that we're going to see Hudson get his in the next couple of weeks. Again, Wazoo has themselves a pretty nice schedule here. If I can pull it up real quick. Yeah, they get Fresno State, Hawaii, San Diego State, Utah State, New Mexico, Oregon State, Wyoming. There's not a single schedule that I would be willing to sit my Wazoo players on. I think Chris Hudson is absolutely worth a guy worth rostering at this point. I'm keeping an eye on Josh Meredith as well. He's definitely a guy that's kind of going up and down. But right now, I mean, again, I can't ignore the volume that Hudson's getting right now. So another guy that I like. Next one up is Mr. Dane Key, wide receiver out of Kentucky. Once again, unfortunately, on a bye this week. Literally all four of the guys that I've talked about so far are all on bye. Go figure, because of course I can't be helpful like that. But no, I'm joking. Dane Key's an interesting one, right? Because I do not trust this Kentucky passing attack really whatsoever. But it's been pretty clear over the last couple of weeks that Brock Vandergriff has found a connection that he can really rely on. Against Ohio, Dane Key had 10 targets, 7 receptions, 145 yards, no touchdowns. And then the following week afterwards, in the big win over Ole Miss, we saw Dane Key, 12 targets, 8 catches, 101 yards, and a touchdown in that game as well. Once again, I mentioned before that while I'm always a little bit hesitant when it comes to bad passing attacks and everything, there is absolutely some value behind finding the clear best option, the guy with clearly the most chemistry with the quarterback, and just kind of riding on him here. And I think Dane Key's absolutely worth it here. His upcoming schedule is nice outside of the bye this week. He gets Vanderbilt after the bye and then Florida. Like, I'm not sure Kentucky could have asked for a nicer midseason stretch there. So I like Dane Key. I hope that Brock Vandergriff keeps feeding him. And then the last guy we'll discuss in detail here is Lewis Brown IV, wide receiver out of San Diego State, rostered in 13% of leagues here. This past weekend, 12 targets, 8 receptions, 149 yards, no touchdowns. This one might need another week to really cook, but to me it's always extremely notable whenever a Sean Lewis system finds their top outside guy. Especially with Danny O'Neill back, I find it interesting that he was heavily reliant on Lewis Brown IV here in that game versus Central Michigan this past week, where unfortunately they lost. So I'm willing to bet moving forward that Lewis Brown becomes a much more valuable target for this offense, given what he was able to do this past week at Central Michigan. And so, like I said, this could mean another week in the cooker. Because again, before this past weekend, he was averaging 5 targets a game, which is not what I want to see whatsoever. But who knows? Let's go ahead and move on to our wide receiver honorable mentions for this week. This one's a pretty full list right here of guys that I want to talk about here. And four out of the 5 guys here, for those of you who've been waiting on me to bring up guys that are, you know, not on bye, which by the way, Lewis Brown not on bye this week. He plays Hawaii, which is a pretty good matchup as well. But 4 out of the 5 guys here on the honorable mentions page are all playing this weekend. And so if you're looking for the guys that are guys you can grab and plug in for this week, this is the page that I will probably pay the most attention to. We'll start off with Skylar Bell. I've seen him update on a lot of waiver articles to this past weekend. I don't blame you. He had himself a really nice game. 7 targets, 6 catches, 153 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Really finally getting those touchdowns in, because Bell's really been on fire for UConn so far this year. Again, you know, 37 yards against Maryland, 60 yards versus Merrimack, 22 versus Duke. Not great, obviously. Excuse me. I'm reading his longest receptions. I'm like, these numbers don't seem right. Here we go. 141 yards versus Maryland, 105 yards versus Merrimack, only 58 and 43 versus Duke and Florida Atlantic, but then he popped back up this past weekend for 153 yards. The main reason why I'm not fully recommending Skylar Bell is, one, I don't fully trust UConn's scoring capabilities, but then also, two, as you can see here, 7 targets, 2 targets, 13 targets, 3 targets, 7 targets. there's no rhyme or reason as to when, you know, Skylar Bell is getting the ball. Now, he gets Temple this weekend. Temple has a very porous secondary, and I fully expect him to take advantage of that. But otherwise, like, there's a reason why I'm a little hesitant on him, but I think he's perfect for people who are looking for a decent starting wide receiver option, at least for this week. Same deal with the rest of these guys here. Again, Jaden Williams, wide receiver out of Texas State, rostered on 4% of leagues. He's got Troy this weekend. It's not my favorite matchup of all these guys, but to me, when you're stuck in bye week situations, I think going after offenses that you know are going to put up some points and probably trying to find that, you know, third wide receiver option, maybe if they're available. Obviously, second is even better if you can find them. But I think that's exactly what you're going to do here with Jaden Williams, where if you got Joey Hobert, if you got Cole Wilson, why not take a shot on Jaden Williams as well and just have two pieces of that offense to try to suck up those points with? Jacoby James, wide receiver to UMass, is another one. I like, obviously, the volume that he's been getting recently. But my problem is that, one, not a big fan of UMass's offense just in general, and two, given what NIU's done to NC State and Notre Dame so far, seems like they have themselves a pretty solid defense, and so I'm not going to trust UMass against that. And then another wide receiver to talk about here is, again, very similar to Jaden Williams, Justin Lockhart, wide receiver out of San Jose State, rostered 8% of rosters, going up against Nevada this weekend. Nick Nash is incredible, and I obviously want him to continue his dominance because I have him in a couple of leagues. But, you know, defenses are going to eventually figure out they didn't need to bracket him and make sure that he can't get free, which obviously he's good enough to still be able to do regardless. But there's one person that really stands to benefit that happens. That is Justin Lockhart, the wide receiver of San Jose State, coming off of injury here. I like what he's able to do so far. We've seen, you know, we've seen Craig Stutzman's offense have room for two wide receivers sometimes. And so I think Lockhart, if, you know, if people try to bracket Nash this weekend, I think he's absolutely worth, right? Or I absolutely think that he will be popping off from that point on there. So I think Lockhart's worth a shot to grab and just start for this week. And, you know, I like the matchup against Nevada there. Last one here. This one, unfortunately, I guess I couldn't keep away from it. There's just so many dang teams on buys. But I do think Matt Sykes, wide receiver out of Rice, is interesting, right? Obviously, Landon ran some goals. I don't know what's going on with him. They're not going to give us really any information there. But I do like what Matt Sykes has done over the last couple of weeks. 11 targets versus Army, 14 targets this past week versus Charlotte, 82 yards, 97 yards, a touchdown in one of those games. I think that Sykes is quickly developing into a go-to receiver for EJ Warner, and especially in a PPR league. Again, I'm not entirely sure what Rice's scoring capabilities are moving forward, but in a PPR league, I would definitely be heavily interested in Matt Sykes. All right, so that's all of our wide receivers. Let's talk about the one tight end I want to talk about this week, and I'm not going to talk about him too much. Matt Lauder, tight end out of Boise State, had himself a really nice game this past week. 4 receptions, 96 yards, and 2 touchdowns. The second time in 2 weeks that he has scored a touchdown and 90-plus yards in a game. Obviously, it is a tight end position. It is going to be funky. But Boise State really does not have any kind of consistent pass catchers right now, whether it is, you know, talent-wise, but also just injury-wise. And Lauder over the last 2 weeks has become very much a guy that this team, I think, is going to be relying on just a little bit more. And I think that we will be, I think that, you know, all the major tight ends are gone, but I think Lauder is somebody to keep an eye on to see what he's able to do over the next couple of weeks. He's got Utah State and Hawaii on deck. If he doesn't do anything about those guys, you guys can call me wrong. I'm not preparing a full slide for streaming DSTs this week, mostly because good freaking luck finding good ones that you can feel really, really confident about. The one I will throw out there that is pretty widely available is James Madison. They absolutely destroyed Ball State this past weekend. They get UL Monroe this week. I think that's a pretty juicy matchup. Otherwise, this is absolutely the kind of week where, you know, I hope you were able to nab, you know, the likes of a Minnesota previously, a Michigan, a Georgia playing Auburn, Alabama playing Vanderbilt. Who the heck does Clemson play this weekend? I can't remember off the top of my head. They played Stanford last week, but they get Florida State this weekend. A DJU-less Florida State offense, and they get Brock Glenn, who, good Lord, if they really think Brock Glenn's going to fix that offense, I got a bridge to sell them. Or I got a beachfront property to sell them in Nebraska. So I think that this is the kind of week where if you're the person that drafted those defenses to cold and stash and everything every week, this is the kind of week I think that you are sitting back and feeling pretty good about yourself and just watching all the, everybody else that were streaming defenses scramble for like the few remaining good options that might be out there. So, all right, y'all. With that, we come to the end of our show. I apologize for the yawns and everything. I'm not sure what's coming over to me. Actually, I know what's coming over to me. I'm recording this way too late at night. But regardless of anything else, I appreciate all of y'all. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you have not already, leave a like, a comment, and a subscribe if you're watching this on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show. Leave a five-star review wherever you can. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here next Monday. We'll break down another round of waiver. I got the wrong show notes on here. We'll see you guys here on Wednesday, when we put out our start sits for the week. I know you guys are heavily interested in that one for this week, given all the bye week. So we will make sure we go out of our way for that one. Until then, really, really appreciate you guys, and I hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.